P Blue. What we talking about? Indianapolis, AFC South. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Topics, loaded like offense. Colt-centric, talk about it often. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Here with George Brimmer on the Colts cast here. We are also live on YouTube. So this is a nice entry here to get to kind of what they thought they saw in Wilkins. Okay, now he's a bigger back. He's got more size. They talked about his elusiveness. I felt that being that they've got Mac, who's got some size himself, but he's a more of a finesse runner as well. He's not a super physical running back. Nyheim Hines, he is maybe attempts to try to be a little bit more physical. However, his stature is obviously going to keep that somewhat under wraps, you would think. He's going to have to be excellent. You know what I mean? To be a real force in between the tackles at 5'8". But Jordan Wilkins is what, 6'1", 210, I think. I was a little shocked, not because they picked another running back. I think I was more shocked that they picked a guy who's been described as a finesse back after having the backfield that they already had in place.
Yeah, when we saw the size, because, you know, a lot of times on this day, the guys will come off and we'll be in the media room and you're trying to scramble, and a lot of times, first we've heard of them, to be honest.
Right.
And we saw the size and we thought, okay, here's the Thunder guy. You know, they got the Thunder to go with the Lightning. And then it didn't take long to start seeing scouting reports and realize, no, that's not really who this guy is. What Ballard mentioned about him when he was comparing him to Matt Forte was vision.
Right.
He said this guy sees the field so well and he has such good football IQ. I think that's where they're really, really excited about him. He sounds like more comparable to Mac, really, than Hines is. I think Hines is really, other than the speed, a very different style of running back. I think there's more similarities between Wilkins and Mac in terms of how they'll be used and what they'll expect from him. And I think Wilkins is maybe a little more willing or common to run between the tackles. I think that's one of the things with Mac, you know, we've heard a lot about he bounces it to the outside at every opportunity. Wilkins, I'm not sure is going to do that. He can do it. He can. It's part of his game. But I think he will run between the tackles as part of that vision. And also, with Wilkins in particular, we heard a lot about this week zone blocking scheme, and that's how they want to run, that's how they want to play. Depending to the degree that they do that, with Wilkins, that vision, there's a little Arian Foster in there. It seems to fit that style really, really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's got to be a lot of fun just for us. And it is a lot of fun to sit here and think about how exciting that's going to be for this backfield. And one thing that it does, if they're not, you know, Robert Turbin being the kind of the short down back in the roster right now, you like I said, you get a guy who's got a little more size to Mac and Wilkins. The one thing with those three, with Wilkins, Mac, and Hines, you're definitely not going to know if it's going to be a pass or a run, I think. I think that if they've got those guys in there, all three of them can catch the ball out of the backfield. All three of them have speed, and all three of them are going to be guys that they're going to be really kind of relying on, I think, to take this running game, this offense in general. With the movement that Frank Reich likes to do pre-snap and everything else. And they even talked about Hines being lined up, that he was a slot receiver for a big part of his college career, I believe. And so that's really interesting for, you know, considering the weapons that Andrew Luck's going to have in the backfield with him.
Yeah, Hines has a viral video out there, and it looks like the Matrix. I don't know if you've seen it. He's got a play where he's doing like a backflip, and he catches a football at the same time, and it's
oh, I have seen that. I have seen
something
that.
Else. He was a receiver when he first got to North Carolina State, and mm-hmm. He's got hands. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, that's definitely a big plus too. I mean, Mac had a lot of catching in college as well. It just didn't seem that it worked real well for him as a rookie. When he would catch the ball and he could get upfield, man, you could have an explosive play right away. But he just didn't have a great year receiving, I didn't think, when he was used. Darius Fountain, a wide receiver from Northern Iowa, didn't know much, if anything at all, about him, but you get to see a little bit of his highlight tape. And, of course, we take it with a grain of salt that it is a highlight tape. That's understood. But
the fact of the matter is he goes up to get the ball. He's a very good route runner from what we've heard. He's a guy who has a ton of upside, and I think that this is really exciting for this Colts offense as well. I was on the bus here kind of talking about I didn't feel that Ballard was all that worried about the Colts receiving core going into this. They were probably going to draft a receiver or two, but it wasn't going to be early because there are so many of those guys on the bottom of the roster who are really intriguing as far as I'm concerned. I mean, when you look at the size and what they wanted out of Dante Moncrief, you've got a lot of 6'2", 6'3", receivers, KJ Brent, Krishan Hogan, even 6'3", Shontavis Jones, a lot of guys who are really have good size, Dre Anderson, that are, you know, people that I think it seems that Chris Ballard really likes. So he's got them on the roster. Now he gets a couple more weapons with Darius Fountain and Deion Kane even. So, I mean, it seems like it, as late as they decided to go with some of their skill positions, it looks like the Colts have, you know, kind of on the surface anything, had a sneaky nice draft in that department despite not getting even the very first skill position player until the fourth round.
Yeah, it was, you know, they kind of set the table on the first 2 days, and then they came in today and they got some guys who can carry the ball behind that line that they built, and then they got some receivers who can make plays downfield, and I think that's what you're looking for. They're going to add a lot of competition now into that receiver room, and there already was a lot for guys down towards the bottom of that roster. It's a lot of unproven guys, mm-hmm. but a lot of potential in that receiving core. And now you've got two more guys to kind of push that forward and make that competition even more intense and even more fun to watch. And I don't see the downside to it. I just don't. Both those are kind of bigger receivers that they took today. I think they're both 6'1". They've got – Fountain's got crazy hops, it looks like,
yeah.
At least what you can see, you know, in the highlights. And he's a guy that he went to an FCS school. He had to work for everything. I heard him do a radio interview just randomly before the draft, and he was talking about nothing's ever been handed to him. So he, for a long time, kind of thought maybe he would be an undrafted free agent type of guy. He was going to have to earn his way in the league that way. And at some point, may have been his junior year, he was working out. I think there was a connection with his college coach somehow and Ed McCaffrey. And Ed McCaffrey came and worked out with him and looked at him and said, "You're going to be drafted." And it was kind of the moment, I think, for Fountain where he understood, at least the way in the interview, the way he was talking, that was kind of the moment where he understood kind of what his potential was and just made him that much more hungry and that much more willing to kind of work on what he needed to do to get to the NFL. And obviously he's been able to do that and become a fifth round pick. I think he's a guy who seems to be an overachiever for most of his career. And it'll be interesting to see if he can carry that on. Kane to me is the most interesting pick of the day. Here's a guy that Lance Zierlein had rated in the second or third round,
yep.
You know, playing in Clemson, very productive as a junior. It dropped off a little this year, but, you know, we talked to the scout today. Actually, Morocco Brown, the director of college scouting, was in talking about it. He did say part of that's the fact that Deshaun Watson is in Houston now. That's one
right.
reason that Kate's production dropped off. There was kind of a hiccup when he was a freshman. He was suspended. There was a failed drug test. It didn't really seem like there was anything since then, so it's hard to say really why he fell this far. Morocco Brown said there's more than just one reason, but he's an uber talented kid, according to Brown. And I just think he's the one guy that you look at and you wonder, hey, you know, what's there? Is this maybe a real diamond in the rough? And I think the running backs have a lot of traits about them that can get you excited, and you want to see what they're going to be able to do on field. Darius Fountain is in that boat, too, mm-hmm. where he's got a lot of traits that should translate to success. But Deion Kane, he maybe has a chance to be a number two receiver in this league if he can live up to the potential some people saw in him coming into the draft.
Yeah, I agree. And that has to have people excited. You know, a lot of people were really down on this draft in the beginning because the Colts did go two guards out of their first three picks and an outside linebacker that they didn't know anything about. But I think you see everything that Ballard's doing, and I really, really like this draft so far. The one thing that I was kind of hoping that the linebackers would come a little bit earlier because I thought there were some guys on the board who could really make a difference in that Colts front seven. But they end up waiting until the seventh round and grab two linebackers, Matthew Adams out of Houston and Zaire Franklin out of Syracuse. And I got to tell you, Zaire Franklin, you guys have to go follow him. He's got probably one of the best Twitter handles ever, and it's Ziggy Smalls. It's excellent.
He's another guy, too, that he's not at the level that Kane was, and I'm not sure that he was ever thought of as that high of a draft pick, but he's a guy that Mike DeReese, again, was the scout that recommended him, and he's really high on this guy. He's incredibly productive at Syracuse, just a tackle machine. And, again, the speed is there. The instincts apparently are there. And this is a guy, even though he's a seventh rounder, there's going to be an opportunity in that linebacking core. This is a guy that's going to be fun to watch as early as rookie minicamp and see – you know, kind of what he looks like out there on the field.
Mm-hmm. And obviously we had some other news today that the Colts traded away Henry Anderson during the draft. They talked about that. We've talked about that a lot. I'm sure that a lot of us who cover the Colts have talked about it. Henry Anderson wasn't a real perfect scheme fit on the surface, but as he apparently came in and lost weight, people were excited to see what he could do, where he would do it. What does that do, you think, for the Colts going forward? Because the Colts didn't draft any defensive linemen necessarily, other than, well, I guess if you consider Tyquan Lewis, you know, maybe a defensive lineman, which he technically is. Kamiko Touré and Leonard are absolutely linebackers, in my opinion. Touré did come down into 4-point occasionally, or 3-point, you know, but they're not interior defensive linemen like most of us assume that Henry Anderson would have had to have been used to have been effective in this new defense with Matt Eberflus.
Yeah, that was one of the interesting things with Anderson, because he did lose the weight, and he said at that time that he thought he was going to play end, and that's definitely where he wanted to be. So we thought, you know, going into the draft, okay, Henry Anderson is going to be in that mix at end with Danico Autry, and then we found out last week that John Simon is also – at end, and we weren't sure if he'd be, you know, a linebacker or an end. So then you had Jabal Sheard, and all of a sudden that room's kind of crowded, and you're trying to figure out where Anderson fits, and is he a better fit inside? And then when you see Touré come off the board, and Ballard made it pretty clear yesterday that he sees him as a guy who's going to be in a three-point stance. He's looking forward to that. He thought his get-off in a two-point stance was as good as he had seen.
Right.
So we can't wait to see what he does out of a three-point stance. So it sounds like Touré is going to be in that end picture. I do think Tyquan Lewis is going to be – he may get a shot at end, but it sounds like he's going to play inside a little bit more and be a versatile guy that can move around. And all of a sudden, we were talking earlier in the day, so it was kind of funny when the trade came up. We were talking in the media room earlier today, hey, where does Henry Anderson fit? Mm-hmm. Trying to kind of slot him in, and we really couldn't find that spot. So when the trade came down, really wasn't all that surprising. And, of course, he went through a 3-4 team where he should be a much better fit, could go back to that 3-4 defensive end spot with the Jets.
Yeah. And it's kind of funny that the Colts traded with the Jets again. I thought it was kind of interesting that throughout this process of the draft, the Colts traded with the Browns, if I'm not mistaken, once. I think it was when they came up to get Tyquan Lewis. They actually moved up to get him.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was, you know, kind of interesting. You see, and one of the moves that, and I think that if I'm not mistaken, it was right before the Colts were going to pick. In fact, it was the pick before that they traded to Oakland. KJ McIntosh came off the board, if I believe that's his name, something like defensive tackle. He came off the board, and I thought actually that the Colts might be looking at him. And next thing you know, the Colts are trading out of there to go back a little bit further. They ended up getting two picks from Oakland for that, or well, one extra pick, but they ended up getting, I think, 159 and 185 out of that. So The Colts, I mean, overall, what are your thoughts on this? Like I said, not, you know, the Colts didn't get Bradley Chubb. They did get Quentin Nelson. That was kind of their splash pick for the most part. But you could argue that Kamiko Ture in, you know, past the midway point of the second round is really kind of their splash pick. It seems that he's definitely doing what he says he's going to do. He's going to focus on the trenches on both sides of the ball and try to build this team to the future.
Yeah, I think it was a prototypical Chris Ballard draft class. He said last night, point blank, I've dreamt about a draft like this, you know, getting offensive and defensive linemen and doing that. And, you know, I don't think that was a figure of speech. I think he literally has dreamt about having this opportunity. So I think it was everything you expect and what you should expect moving forward from a Chris Ballard draft. He went early in the trenches. He was trying to build a foundation there. Both he and Frank Reich drove that home big time both Thursday night and Friday night that this is going to be the foundation of this team. That's what they think wins in the NFL. They want to win in the trenches. They went all in on that on the first two nights of the draft. They built the front seven up on defense for most of the day on Friday. And between the two guards, they went a long way towards building that offensive line in Thursday with Quentin Nelson and then really early on Friday with Braden Smith. So I think that's what you're going to see from him every year. I think he's going to take a defensive lineman every year, whether it's an end or a tackle. I think you're going to see a defensive lineman added to the mix every year. And it wouldn't surprise me if he takes an offensive lineman every year. And then after that, the other guys, the skill guys, if you will, even Darius Leonard, who's going to be probably, it sounds like he's going to be the will in this new 4-3 scheme. Each of those guys, they fit that Ballard profile. Twitchy, fast, athletic, those, all of them, you know, every one of them, kind of the same profile, really fast, really athletic, really kind of freak guys when it comes to athleticism. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you're going to see from Chris Ballard. Mm-hmm. Speed at the skill positions, a focus in the trenches, and to me, it's, will the picks work? Will they not? Who knows? Every year, you never know. We'll see that as it unfolds. But from a philosophy standpoint, it was vintage blueprint Chris Ballard. And it sounds like Frank Reich's in lockstep with that thinking.
Yeah. And I know we've talked about these guards a lot, but it's interesting because you've got now Quentin Nelson, guaranteed starter. I mean, you know, they can say that he's going to earn the position, but he'll earn it. Nobody thinks he won't.
Oh yeah.
So that's kind of my point, what I'm getting at here. But Braden Smith, I don't know that a lot of people are aware of his athleticism and his ability. You know, they're kind of two different guys. You know, Quentin Nelson has that guy, or is that guy who can kind of get out and lead the charge, pulling, if necessary, mean and nasty, you know, taking out any corners or safeties or linebackers, whoever gets in his way. But Braden Smith's kind of that guy who's going to go up and he's going to be able to get his body up to the next level for some of those interior runs, whether it be some of the cracks or it be, you know, some counter moves or something like that. This is an interesting position for the Colts. The Colts now have two starting guards, you know, theoretically anyways, and the Colts re-signed Jack Muhort. The Colts signed Matt Slauson. The Colts have some real interior depth now. The question is what do we make of the competition then at right tackle and where that goes and kind of where does Jack Muhort fit? Does he fit into that competition at right tackle or is he the guard? What's Slauson going to do? You know, I mean, there's a lot to be figured out with this offensive line. And it seems like for once, you're kind of excited to find out what actually happens.
There's a whole lot to be figured out with the line. Stephen Holder asked today if they thought Braden Smith might be able to play tackle just because his body type looks like it could fit at that position. And Morocco Brown said, you know, Auburn kind of tried it a little bit in preseason last year, but then they had some guys step up at right tackle, and so they felt more comfortable just leaving Smith at guard. And I think that's where the Colts definitely want to play him, but it's something that – clearly is at least in the back of their mind, and you can't 100% rule out. But I don't think you see Jack Muhort go to right tackle. That was a pretty disastrous experiment a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think they want to leave him at guard and let him, you know, kind of compete in that spot. And the thing with Slauson, you got to remember, too, is not just guard. He can play both guard spots. He mostly played left guard. Well, he entirely played left guard throughout his NFL career, but I think he can move over and play the right side as well. But he's also played center the last couple of years. So,
right.
You know, he's a guy that you could maybe use as a jack of all trades there in the middle. And if anybody goes down or they have a problem on game day, you know, didn't see that happen at all last year ever. He could fill in any one of those three interior spots. And I think that's a good place to be. But it also creates good competition because I think Nelson, they can say what they want. Nelson's a starting left guard right now, today.
Right. Yep.
That's, you know, other than catastrophe happening, he's the starting left guard. But Smith now is in a competition. I think Muhort and Fossen will push him, and it'll be good for all three of them to see who can come out and earn that right guard spot. And then who knows? You know, if they decide that Fossen or Muhort early on actually has earned that right guard job, maybe they do start moving Braden Smith at some point into the right tackle role as well. Who knows? But like you said, there's a lot of intrigue there. And I just know that if I'm Andrew Luck or I'm Jacoby Brissett, I feel confident that I can step up in the pocket. I can't remember the last time I said that for a Colts quarterback.
Right. And I think the most of the intrigue, look, we've been through this process where we've tried to kind of, build up this offensive line. We saw Denzel Good the year, 2015, that he came in and played really well. When they moved him out to tackle, they played him at tackle. He played really good. 2016, they move him back into guard. Doesn't work out, right? They move him back out to tackle even last year in preseason, and that didn't really work out. LaRaven Clark comes in, looks completely lost when you get into training camp after he's drafted as far as being able to physically do the demanding parts of being a pro football player. Sits most of the year. You start hearing some coaches talking about him. He's developing really well. He gets in the last few games of the year, looks really good. You think maybe he's the right tackle of the future for the Colts after all, kind of surprisingly enough. Joe Haig, back and forth, right guard, right tackle, right guard, right tackle, whatever they need, the utility man of the bunch. Is LaRaven Clark, do you think – now this is something I thought about today, and I don't even know if you've got – I don't know who's got the answer to this because it just intrigues me with – Frank Reich's system being one that gets the ball out quick enough, not the long developing pass routes downfield like we saw with not only Bruce Arians, but with Chudzinski. Totally different offensive setup, totally different approach to the game. I'm wondering if LaRaven Clark, with his days in Texas Tech, kind of an air raid system, does this kind of not fit him better, but does it benefit his a run at trying to get a starting spot at right tackle?
It could, it definitely could, and I think he's definitely there now. They had him at guard last year, and no one really saw that coming.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that there's a spot for him there now. I think he's definitely going to be out on the edge, so I think he's in that mix. I think Good will again be in that mix. I think it's really, really good for Joe Haig,
right?
Just from this standpoint, because like you said, he had been bouncing back and forth, and now there is no reason, none that I can think of, to move Joe Haig inside. He can come to work on Monday and be a tackle,
mm-hmm.
and know his position for the first time since he's been a pro football player. I think that's really big for Joe Haig. And I think that'll be interesting to see how that plays out through the spring and summer. That'll be a competition that, yeah, none of those guys have really staked a claim to that right tackle spot in the past couple years. They've each had their shots. They've each had their moments at times. They've each had their struggles at times. But it'll be interesting now to watch that competition because I think you're right. I think it's a better scheme fit for Clark than it's been in the past. I think for Haig, it's finally an opportunity to focus on one spot
mm-hmm.
and one job. And I think for Denzel Good, you're looking at probably the last chance. Now or never for him.
Yeah.
You're coming in, there's no guard spot to fall back on. If you don't get this right tackle job, you might not be on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it'll be a really interesting competition. And who knows? Ballard's all about, talent acquisition's a year-round process. There may be a right tackle coming who's not on the roster right now, who who may be here in training camp, who may be here in September. Mm-hmm. It may not be done, but I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, how those three guys coexist and how that competition plays out.
Yeah, and not to mention, we've seen Chris Ballard make decisions, but then once that becomes a bad decision further down the road, then he gets rid of that person. You know what I mean? And maybe that ends up, you know, Slauson just signed. So, I mean, I'm not saying we should expect that. But I'm just saying you can't rule anything out with Chris Ballard. If the guy,
I'm with Brian Schwenke last year.
Yep, there you go. Exactly. And it just seems – I love that about him. You know what I mean? People are like, oh, that's a great one. He's already gotten rid of the guy. Yeah, it is great because that means you're not just banking on the decision that you've already made to sign this guy. You're saying simply that he's just not good enough with what you've got on the table right now, and you get rid of him. You made a mistake and you move on. Why sit there and, you know, we've seen that too often, that guys get very egotistical about acquisitions that they've made, and they hang on to them for too long and they end up screwing their team. I remember that we had somebody in the building like that not long ago, and that is just a different approach. And I think that we should all, you know, enjoy that, love that about who the GM is right now, as opposed to a guy who's going to hang on and just kind of run, you know, everything into the dirt, regardless, just because of his ego. So I think that that's really interesting. This offensive line's really got me interested right now. I'm kind of excited to see, you know, what happens out after rookie camp. You get into that mandatory mini camp, or, you know, mini camp, and you see kind of where they put everybody last year. We had some surprises last year with Fairley being the guy over TJ Green, you know, everybody wondering and assuming that Farley was going to be the starter and that TJ Green may not have a spot. Same type of thing now. You see where they put him, and then you just see, okay, that's at least going to be where they're going to try the competition at and make this thing a real deal. It's pretty exciting. For the offensive line, it should be exciting for Andrew Luck, like you kind of mentioned. You know, this is going to be the best offensive line already that he's ever had in front of him, and they haven't even stepped on the field together. So I think that that's...
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
Absolutely, 100%. Exactly. They haven't taken a snap, and it's already, on paper, the best offensive line that he's ever played behind. And I think, too, you know, I talked about this being kind of a vintage blueprint draft for Chris Ballard. This is fine. This is what he's wanted on the offensive line all along. May not be talent-wise, you know, they may still be a little bit mixing here and there, but the competition that we're going to see is what he has wanted all along on this line, and I think that's what's going to be exciting for him. Mm-hmm. He's been working to this point to where there may be a lineman or two who gets cut from this team, who gets signed and ends up on another roster.
Yeah, it's a sexy process. George, it's a sexy process, my man. You know, we didn't see any defensive backs in any shape or sort drafted. No corners. There was a couple guys there later. Even some guys who were expected to be drafted that ended up falling undrafted. But as far as in the draft, you know, Ballard didn't, you know, bite on any of those. We really just saw, like you said, you know, linebackers, defensive ends, whatever you want to call it, running backs, wide receivers, and a couple linebackers late. We didn't see the corners. We didn't really see, you know, a whole lot of anything else. It was very focused on, you know, well, like he said, explosive athletes that are going to help our roster get better. So you can pretty much take need off the books from now on, a lesson learned for us next year, that, you know, it doesn't matter what the Colts need this year. He's going to look for the best player every single time, unless they are the same in his book, and then he'll go with need, like he kind of expressed today, which isn't something that we shouldn't have expected. It just seems like, you know, you're looking, like myself, I'm sitting there looking in the second and third round for some of these better linebackers that are coming off, you know, and the Colts, considering what the Colts have at linebacker right now, especially on the inside, you think, well, eventually just down the line, he's going to end up getting it. But I know myself, I seem to forget about Najee Good. You know, he played in the Super Bowl last year.
Yep.
I mean, so
he did.
He's not a bad guy. Plus, we've got Jeremiah George, Jermaine Grace, who've been in the system for a year or two now. Antonio Morrison may or may not get another chance to start there. Darnell Sankey is another guy who I really liked last year as far as his coverage ability and everything else. But these guys can play inside and outside in those positions. So maybe Chris Ballard, for the moment, has got what he likes at that position.
I think, yeah, for now. And I think he's a guy that understands you're not going to fix everything in one draft.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know, I've heard several times that it was close in round one between Nelson and Smith, and that the tiebreaker was basically the idea that we're going to get Quentin Nelson because we need to protect Andrew Luck.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not that they didn't consider. If they considered Roquan Smith in round one, I'm sure there were linebackers they were considering in round two. And again, the same thing. There may have been somebody when they took Braden Smith that they were looking at, but ultimately the gap, the cliff that you were going to fall off at offensive line at that point, they didn't want to do that. And so they stuck to the board. And like you said, it's going to be like that. That's the way Chris Ballard is going to approach this. It's going to be like that every year. You know, needs are going to be nice. They'll get filled if they match up with the board, but otherwise he's going to take the best players and he's going to definitely create competition and depth in the trenches.
Not necessarily by player, but what was your best or your favorite part about this draft? What about it when something like a light went off in your head at some point in the draft and thought, this is really cool?
Yeah, you know, today when they started going off the skill position guys, when Hines got taken, my eyebrows kind of rose, like, okay, you know, here's the speedy guy. I kind of expected this to be a speed-based draft from things that we had heard coming in. And then they go in and get Darius Fountain, and you're starting to go, hey, there's a little bit of a pattern here. And by the time they came back and took Wilkins, you know, it felt like Frank Reich had kind of taken the wheel today, and he was kind of driving the bus. At that point, it's when it all came together, and I started to understand, hey, now I see what they were doing Thursday and Friday. And you see the way they, like I said, they set the table, and then they came in and they brought the speed guys in and found, I think, some really good guys on the last day of the draft. Like you said, it's a sneaky good skill position draft,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't even bother to address those positions until Saturday. So to me, that was the most fun thing about this draft, to watch it unfold and to kind of have that aha moment early this afternoon where you're like, ah, that's what Chris Ballard's doing. That's what the plan is here.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that this draft helps them significantly going into next year? Or do you really just think it's, you know, one layer towards the ultimate goal of being, you know, a real contender for, you know, next year? Is this more of a closer to 500 team in your opinion? And just based on the draft class bringing, you know, a higher level of at least startership, and then, you know, maybe adding considerable talent to the depth, raising kind of the bar in that regard. Or like I said, do you think this with Andrew Luck is a team even that may be able to compete next year?
I think this is a better football team already. And Jim Irsay is jumping out of his shoes excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
Which you take that for what you will. The owner is a very emotional guy. We know that. He's a very excitable guy. But he was legitimately excited. It reminded me, and it'll be interesting to see the way it plays out, it reminded me of 2012. Because if you think back to when Andrew Luck was drafted, the day he was drafted, Jim Irsay was still preaching patience. He was still talking about it took 6 years to win a playoff game with Peyton Manning. These things need to be built. It takes time. You have to be you have to roll with the punches. You have to be willing to take that and go through that process. And then rookie minicamp happened, and all of a sudden he saw Andrew Luck on the field, and it was like, boom, the light bulb went off. And within that couple of weeks span, it went from, hey, be patient, six years to win a playoff, to, you know what, this is multiple Lombardi goal, and you know, he was already doing that. And I felt the same thing. Just last month, he was still talking about a three-year building plan and the process that this was going to take. And Andrew's back in the building for 3 weeks. And now he's like, if Andrew Luck is healthy, this is a pretty formidable football team. And you know what? As crazy as he can be, as excitable as he is, he's got a point.
Mm-hmm.
If Andrew Luck is healthy and is playing behind even a league average offensive line, they're going to be a team you at least have to deal with. I don't know how many wins they'll get, but they won't get pushed around the way they did at times last year. And if you've got Andrew Luck back there making plays and some speedy guys to get the ball to, it should be fun to watch.
Yeah.
So I think they have taken steps towards back, towards respectability. I think in the big picture, it's just another layer. It's just another, you know, coat of polish on the rebuilding project. But when you put a healthy Andrew Luck into the mix, it's going to be fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. George, one more question before I let you go, my man, and get you out of here. I know that you're probably exhausted as well. But what do you kind of make of Irsay bringing up the part about teams inquiring about trading for Andrew Luck? And I guess
that was interesting.
I guess what I mean by that is not so much that what do you think of the fact that teams were wanting to trade for him, because of course that why wouldn't they? But I mean more or less more of the fact that Irsay actually vocalized it.
Yeah, no, you know, it was interesting because Megan McKeon from Channel 8 asked Chris Ballard during his presser again, you know, hey, Jim Irsay mentioned that there were some trades out there, there were some possibilities, and the team wasn't interested. You know, can you elaborate on that at all? And Ballard laughed, first of all. And he said, yeah, it happened. And what's really interesting about it is he said, it was the trading deadline last year. And we went back and looked that up. It was Halloween was the trading deadline. So people were calling at 3 days, 2 days before he was shut down for the season, at a point at which Andrew Luck's value was probably the lowest it would be in his career.
Mm-hmm.
They were calling, and you can't blame other GMs for making the call. You know the craziness that was going around, even in Indianapolis on the airwaves. I won't mention names, but there were certainly some afternoon radio shows that were pushing an agenda at that time.
Right.
And you hear it so much. I can't blame another GM for checking in, but I'll tell you, Chris Ballard said he laughed on the phone, and he said, and I quote, I don't want that on my resume
right,
as far as trading
that.
Andrew Luck.
Yeah, that was good.
And so there you go. You know, I think that's what I think Irsay was bringing it up to say, look, we believe he'll be back and we're committed to this guy so much so that we turned down some pretty good trade, you know, some things that really would have helped us in the draft to keep him here. And I think it just tells you, look, Ballard said it last week. They traded the number 3 pick in the draft. They're not worried about their quarterback right now.
Right. And I thought it was kind of funny that, you know, last year everybody's talking about, well, Brissett's playing pretty decent. Maybe he'll gain some trade value, you know. In the meantime, in the background, everybody's calling about Andrew Luck, the guy who hasn't even played. You know, I think that was one of the things that I thought was most interesting and probably funny about it. That was kind of the contrast from what we see to what they actually know and hear.
Yeah, well, and it tells you once again, in case you needed that reinforced, and I know you didn't, just what the rest of the league thinks of Andrew Luck.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely, and they know, like you said, we don't need to get into that. We know exactly what he brings. Everybody else does as well. And that, I think, is the part where you kind of throw roster out the window when you think about Andrew Luck. As you mentioned, you know what he brings. He's done it before with some terrible rosters, and right now he's got a roster that's definitely A, getting younger, and two, or B, getting significantly better, we think, is in terms of overall depth, some guys who can grow to be impact players. This is really going to test Frank Reich's coaching staff as far as development, don't you think?
Yeah, right off the bat. And it kind of, again, goes with that Chris Ballard philosophy and everything we've heard from him. Go back to the coaching staff before Josh McDaniels left, before it even started, the whole coaching search. He said, I want teachers. I want guys who can come in and develop talent. And you see the kind of guys that he drafted, and it all just kind of fits perfectly, dovetails nicely together.
Mm-hmm. I know that I'm excited. I was kind of surprised when I started seeing that some people were less than excited about what the Colts have done so far in the draft. I love the fact that they went ahead and got the guards. I love the fact that they waited for receivers. I love the fact that they doubled down on running backs. I think that's fine. I think if you wanted one of those guys, Darius Geis, Nick Chubb, or any of those guys, that's great. And those guys would have been probably really good running backs in this system. It's not that they wouldn't have been, but you also have to look at what these guys do bring. And these guys do bring excitement to the guy who's going to be calling the plays. So that, in just on the surface there, you have to be happy about that. That the coach is happy. He likes the talent level he's getting. I'm excited to hear from Matt Eberflus sometime soon to kind of see how he visualizes this defense turning out with what he's seen in the draft so far. And kind of how he expects, you know, kind of this defense to really mesh itself. Cause I think people are kind of turned off by the whole Tampa 2 moniker. You know what I mean? I don't think that really turns a lot of people on thinking that doesn't sound like an attacking style defense. That doesn't sound like a defense that's going to be fast and angry and brutal. And I think it just puts more of a finesse thought in everybody's head. But I'm excited to hear from him. I want to hear what he sees with these draft picks. I want to hear what he sees with the guys he has currently on the roster a little more now, to where he sees, you know, some of the strengths as well. Not to mention, we talked about the cornerbacks. Is it going to be Quincy Wilson and Pierre Desir starting? You know, I mean, this is something. And not only that, but they've got a decent little host of guys that are there. Nate Hairston is a guy who's got an entire season of experience in the nickel. You know, Chris Milton's another nickel guy from last year. DJ White's a guy that Ballard brought in that you almost have to assume is going to be a guy that he really likes his physicality or something. There's something about him he really likes because he claimed him off waivers from the Chiefs, so you know he liked what he saw there. But Kenneth Acker, one of the most recent acquisitions, he's 6'195". Can he battle for a starting position with Pierre Desir? Or, you know, even Quincy Wilson, will just put it on the table because we were all surprised last year just the same. This cornerback class is surprising that the Colts didn't draft one, but you have to look at what they've got on the roster right now, and you kind of see nice and young, some guys who can play. We've seen what they can do with a couple of surprises that are going to be in there, like I mentioned with Acker and DJ White a little bit. But all in all, it doesn't really look to be that it's hurt anybody. They definitely didn't need a safety, in my opinion. Cornerback was somewhere that you would like to see that they grabbed themselves a starter, a number two or a number one guy even in their minds. But you do kind of like what you've got so far already in the bag.
Yeah, I think it was a vote of confidence in Desir and in Quincy Wilson. And I think that vote of confidence is going to be a big for Quincy Wilson, and that might be part of why they avoided him. I mean, you look at what he went through last year, to have the GM and the head coach basically say, we're good with him, we're good letting him go and be a starter, that could be really big for him coming into this season, just for his confidence and his mindset, and you know, give him that fresh start and that clean slate that he needs. I think, yeah, I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with the way that played out. I think the whole draft class from a year ago, every one of last year's rookies is in a role. Well, not everyone, because, you know, one of them, Zach Banner, isn't even here anymore.
Right.
But the draft class from last year, the vast majority of it now is going to have a bigger role this season. And I think that's kind of what you want to see with your draft class. So it'll be interesting to see, because I think a lot of those guys are better fits for what Frank Reich wants to do on offense and on defense. And it'll be interesting to see how they play out. If by this time next year, we're looking at the 2017 draft class in a little bit different light as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, whether everybody loves last year's draft class because there were some injuries and some lack of production, so to speak, and lack of playing time, you kind of see that the talent was there for sure with that draft class. It's going to be exciting to see how these two draft classes mesh, as you've pointed out. And you know, where the Colts go from here. I think that we should all be excited about this this team this year. But the rest of the AFC South got pretty strong too, especially the Jacksonville Jaguars in this draft. So it'll be a really interesting process to see how these guys kind of battle with the new face Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, change uniform, and they you know, last year even they were significantly better in a lot of different aspects than they have been in the past, and they've actually made some good moves. They've made some good draft picks. So there's a lot for the Colts to that they're going to be going up against. They've got their work cut out for them without question. So it's going to be a lot
of
fun.
Thank God they changed helmets, right?
Yeah. I mean, those things were ugly as hell anyways. I mean, but, you know, they needed a lot of change. That whole teal stuff has got to go, or it needs to be an accent color or something like that, man.
Yeah.
They can't keep that up. But, George, you are the man. I appreciate you hanging out with us for tonight. I know the listeners and the viewers are enjoying it. We need to do this again, man. It's been too long.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt about it. It's always a blast. And, yeah, I think, I don't know. I think the team got better this weekend. I don't know that you can even start thinking about putting win totals on or anything like that.
Right.
But I think it's going to be a fun team to watch. And after what they went through last year, that's not bad.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Going forward, knowing that you've got another quarterback with experience as well, and you've got Andrew Luck coming back looking as buff as he's ever looked. Looks like he legitimately looks like a linebacker now with those arms. So a lot of excitement coming around the corner, man. George, we will talk again soon, my man. I appreciate you for being on.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks a lot. Glad to be able to make some time and enjoying you.
I appreciate it. I know, go get yourself some sleep, man. I know you're exhausted. You've had a long weekend.
It's been long and productive.
It has. All right. George, we'll talk to you later, my man. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
All right, guys. So George Bremer coming back on the show. Always fun to talk to him. Excellent stuff from George as well. He really puts a lot of stuff in perspective. I love talking to George. We can get a lot of information from a lot of guys that cover the team. George has a very natural ability to keep you interested, and I really enjoy that. Also, he hosts Horseshoes and Heroes, and if you guys need to go out and subscribe to that, I haven't seen a new episode in a long time from him, but it's coming up as well. So we didn't really talk about Henry Anderson deal, but let's talk about that. I mean, George and I did for a moment, but not too far in depth. George did point out, you know, that they were talking this morning or this afternoon or whatever, a little bit about, you know, where does Henry Anderson fall in all of this as far as with what they've got and they've brought in. Let's look at that. Let's look at their defensive line right now. Danico Autry, as he mentioned, that was an acquisition through free agency this year. Margus Hunt, they've got him listed as a DN. Now, they haven't switched the positions as of yet. You know, they've got some guys who are listed at outside linebacker that are clearly going to be defensive end. And some of those other ones, they just don't have a real great hold on the roster setup, you know, as far as that goes. But, you know, wherever they're at, they're going to be defensive linemen. Anthony Johnson's another one. Obviously, Jonathan Calvin is there. Caron Reed, he's a guy who I think has some excitement to him and in some explosion as well. Less than 300 pounds, 26 years old. Not a lot of tread on those tires at all, or not a lot of wear on them. Hassan Ridgeway, you know, 320 pounds. He and Grover Stewart here, I think that they've really got to prove their worth. They've either, A, got to be superior run stuffers, or they've really got to show that their explosion can kind of mitigate their size, because as of right now, I mean, they are clearly the two heaviest guys on this defensive line right now. So that is something that you have to look at. Do I think that they're not going to be here? No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm simply saying that those two at their size, and not tall guys, I mean, they've got to be explosive. They've got to show that they belong, you know, especially a guy like Hassan Ridgeway. You know, wasn't on this administration or this group's draft boards. You know, they didn't get him. He came from Grigson. They don't owe him anything, so to speak. You know, Grover Stewart, on the other hand, was a raw guy last year. Size and speed, his natural explosion, despite being over 330 pounds, is what that turned, you know, Ballard's eye to him. So those guys are going to have to do some amazing things, you know, coming in, because now they've got their work cut out for them a little bit with some young guys. Turnover happens very quickly in this league, as we know. So the offensive line shored up. The defensive line and the defense, you know, the front seven in general, got a nice little influx of talent. I really do. I'm excited to watch more of, especially Darius Leonard, you know, to see more about him. Honestly, like I said, Jake Arthur liked him a lot, really spent a lot of time on scouting him. I did not. So I'm excited to see kind of what he brings to the table with himself. So I'm going to be getting into film and stuff on these guys a lot. Kamiko Ture, I did scout, really liked him. He wasn't like in my top five at the position, but you're looking at pure edge rush and you're looking at, you know, kind of the competition that he goes up against. That knocks him down just a touch a little bit. But I'll get back into his film as well. Tyquan Lewis, we'll talk about how he can get into the interior and such. And I'm excited to kind of watch Nyheim Hines as well. Jordan Wilkins is another one. Deion Kane. These guys, you know, this is a really kind of a, it's kind of one of those ugly classes, guys, for a bit, you know, at least the top half of what Chris Ballard pulled in. You get the offensive linemen, you know, you get the linebackers, of despite it being in need, it doesn't seem to be super sexy because their name isn't Roquan Smith or it isn't this or that. You know, Kamiko Ture is not Bradley Chubb. He's not Harold Landry, but he is Kamiko Ture, and being Kamiko Ture could really turn out to be something in the future, especially with the right development from this coaching staff, right? So you get that, the kind of the uglies along both lines early. And then you get into more of the skill position. The sexy picks are late, but those are the ones that are really going to pay off. That's where the bread and butter comes from, you know, to make the sandwich, guys, especially when you look at the receiver, Dreese Fountain. There was some interesting stuff. Like I said, I understand that it was a highlight tape, but it was just you see his explosion. You see how high he can get up for the ball. His hands, they talk a lot about his hands. You see some different coaches' interviews and such. You see what they see in him, how they feel about him. And, you know, Zaire Franklin's another guy that a lot of people were high on as well. It just a lot of fun seeing some of these guys come off. So I am a fan of the draft class. 11 picks end up turning the offensive line around, in my opinion, at least on, you know, for what we know right now, theoretical. Added some pass rush with Ture, some interior pass rush with Lewis, and then you get a little bit of the excitement out of the running backs, and you know, not only that, but Deion Kane, as George mentioned, could be one of those guys that really stands out for the Colts in the future if he can maintain being a number two in this league. And not only that, not only a number two in the league, but a number two to T.Y. Hilton. You know, Chester Rogers now, you know, has a guy that he can battle with to maintain or turn into that number three, whatever he's going to end up being. And then you don't know what Dreese Fountain is going to bring. Definitely a guy that they want to develop, that they liked his natural skill set. So a lot of interest with that. But let's also now turn our focus kind of to the undrafted free agents that the Colts have pulled in, the ones that they're bringing in for tryouts and such. Some of these have already been out. In fact, most of them have. But let's go through them. Colts, a kicker with Mike Badgley, Michigan kicker, Arkansas defensive back, Henri Tolliver signs, Louisiana Tech guard, Joshua Outlaw. According to Aaron Wilson, the Colts signed UNLV defensive back Robert Jackson. So there's a guy. He's actually a corner, but they did use him a lot in the nickel. They used him a lot as a safety as well. So I think that's obviously why they just give him the DB moniker. Stony Brook, also Chris Cooper, another defensive back, more of a corner that I saw, at least what I would see a guess from him in the NFL. Central Michigan offensive tackle J.P. Quinn. And Syracuse wide receiver Steve Ishmael. So those are the ones that the Colts have right now. There's definitely, you know, another list, guys, of a bunch of these guys. Chris Ballard talked about up to 10 to 15 UDFAs getting signed. What does that mean for the next few days? Possibly some cuts, okay? I mean, not necessarily that these guys are going to be the top of the list, you know, as far as the roster goes or anything like that, but he's going to have to make some space. You know, some of these guys are going to get cut. Could be a couple of the receivers. You look at the Colts roster and you see all these guards on there that have already there. Jeremy Vunovich. Get, you know, I mean, I would hope. I don't know if it will because they did sign his. Oh, we've got a little bit of issue with the camera, huh? Go figure. Long time. No more issues with the Colts cast, please. So it is kind of interesting to see where all these guys are going to go. So a lot of intrigue into, let's see, where we got the rest of these guys. There's a bunch of guys that are going to be coming in for visits and invites and tryouts and such like that. San Diego, I think it's South Dakota State, actually. Defensive tackle Kellen Solak, he's received a camp invite. Albert Breer says that JT Barrett is signing with the Colts. Ballard says it's a mini camp tryout. Jordan Renan is reporting that Monmouth safety Mike Basile will have a tryout. West Virginia long snapper Nick Meadows, Purdue defensive lineman Antoine Mills, Iowa offensive lineman Boone Myers, and Bemidji State offensive lineman Brandon Schindler. So there's some names that we're going to be seeing and hearing a little bit about over the next, you know, several weeks and months and such like that. We'll have to see, as I mentioned before, what actually happens with a lot of these guys in terms of who gets cut, you know, soon, who doesn't, what do tryouts, more tryouts come, more of this, more of that. So very, very interested in what everybody thinks about this Colts draft class, because like I said, it wasn't the pretty one. If you want to call it like one that the Dallas Cowboys have had over the past, you know, a few years ago, they had a couple in a row where they went really hardcore after offensive linemen, got some tertiary guys off the rest of the in through the rest of the draft. This isn't going to be necessarily pretty and exciting and jumping around all the time. I mean, I got a couple messages over the past couple days where people were just like, I hate this draft, man. Why do I hate it? And I'm like, I'm telling you why you hate it, because you're not seeing the guys that you've been talking about being second and third round guys come into the Colts. You're seeing guys that you don't know about, or you're seeing guys that aren't at those sexy positions that, you know, get people excited. People get excited about quarterbacks, receivers, running backs, cornerbacks, you know, impact players, for a reason. It's because they make an impact, you know what I mean? A noticeable impact. You don't always see the offensive lineman getting to the second level, taking the linebacker's legs out. You don't always see, you know, the pulling guard getting out there in front. Sometimes you notice the block, sometimes you don't, but more or less what you see is the running back running beside him. And then you're telling everybody what a great run it was, not what a great block this guy did. So these type of drafts are necessary. Not only are they necessary, they're necessary in this stage of the rebuild, right? The Colts have a lot of work to do. The Colts have to present, get some pressure. The Colts have to be able to negate opposing pressure. And like I said, a lot of this is going to be in the Colts division. This is not going to be an easy go at it, right? The Titans, you know, their draft was, you know, kind of so-so. But, I mean, you look at what, let's see, what did the, let's look at the rest of these guys. Let's look through the division real quick before we get out of here tonight. Jacksonville has an insane draft, guys. I mean, Taven Bryan, DJ Chark, Ronnie Harrison, safety out of Alabama. Rule Richardson, that's a guy who dropped because of off-the-field stuff. He was a guy who a lot of people really thought was a starter in this league right now, if I'm not mistaken. Tanner Lee, quarterback, and Leon Jacobs is an edge out of Wisconsin. I think he's better than people realize as well. So not only that, but they signed Quentin Meeks. They signed Alan Lazard, I think, both UDFA receivers. So, you know, Jacksonville's going to have a team, guys. This is not going to be an easy go at it in the AFC South anymore. The Texans picked up Justin Reed in the third pick, in the third round. That was their very first pick of the night, or of the draft, rather. Martinez Rankin, they have him as a center. He's actually a tackle, so they're going to move him down. Jordan Akins, tight end out of Central Florida. Kiki Coutte, wide receiver, Texas Tech. Duke Ejiofor, defensive end. I really liked him. He was in the bottom half of my top 10, but Ejiofor could be a real impact guy in the future, I think. He's got a lot of the explosion and the excitement that people really should be in tune to when you're looking at guys for the future. Jordan Thomas, tight end out of Mississippi. Peter Colombo, an edge out of Stanford. I don't know anything about him. Jermaine Kelly, a defensive back out of San Jose State. That's, you know, that's another pretty good draft considering that they didn't even begin to draft until, you know, day two and late day two at that, you know, talking third round. So, that, you know, Tennessee, or not Tennessee, but Houston came back and made some solid picks. Tennessee, they had a pretty impactful day one, or day one in the early day two, with Rashawn Evans and Harold Landry. Both guys, obviously, Rashawn Evans is a guy who can actually rush the passer quite well. He's an outside linebacker in their system, and he's going to be a guy that the Colts fans are going to have to deal with for a long time. Harold Landry, pure edge rusher. You saw that he fell into the late, or, you know, early second round, 41 overall. Dane Cruikshank, safety out of Arizona, and Luke Falk. And then the Tennessee Titans were done, you know. So, I mean, four draft picks, they are a team, in my opinion, who have the most to prove with what they put on the field next year. That's definitely going to be something like that. Not to mention they've got a brand new coach that I don't think a lot of people have a lot of, you know, a lot of love for, as far as they think that he's going to be special kind of a coach or anything like that. So I think the Tennessee Titans had the most blah draft for the most part, because they were all fire and brimstone in the first two picks. And after that, not a whole lot. I think the Texans did a nice job with theirs, and a difficult one. Like I said, they got Ejiofor when they did, and that's going to be a problem for the future. He's definitely a pass rusher. He's definitely a guy who can stop the run. You know, a lot of interesting play for him, and I'm kind of surprised that he dropped. I mean, there were some other guys that were drafted well ahead of him that probably shouldn't have been. You know, and then you move on to the Jacksonville Jaguars. They get interior disruption. That's just, you know, with Taven Bryan, that's just a very you just don't like to see that with what kind of roster that they've already got. I mean, DJ Chark is a guy who can light it up if he gets in the right system. I don't think that he's meant for Blake Bortles. That's a pick for the future, in my opinion. Ronnie Harrison's a really good safety that they got in the late third round at 93 overall. Really good. They've needed more help along the offensive line. They got it with Will Richardson. So I definitely think that the Jacksonville Jaguars are here to stay. They've dipped into free agency so hard over the past several years, right? But what they're doing in the draft is building so that they can kind of withstand that. Some of that comes off the top in the next couple years. Some of these guys don't stick around and last, but what they've drafted comes underneath them and rises with them as well. So I think that we're seeing the same process from the Colts and Chris Ballard. We should all be excited about this draft, the ugly draft, the draft that the Colts truly, truly needed. Ballard put it together with 11 picks. Sometimes, you know, you look at quantity versus quality. I think that he got a lot of quality and, you know, a lot of quantity to go with that. So I think that that's good. You've got depth. You've got enough pieces that you see the possibilities of this roster kind of starting to take shape. And then you can actually dream and feel and think about Andrew Luck playing. Right? He's coming back. And this is going to be exciting. I mean, look, it wasn't one of those where you can say, I can't wait to see so-and-so on the field with so-and-so right now. I don't really think that, aside if you, and unless you just want to see Quentin Nelson take somebody's head off. But this was the draft that the Colts needed. They had to start out fresh. They had to start out new. Last year's draft gave them a nice, more of a sexy draft with Malik Hooker and Quincy Wilson, you know, even gotten some Terrell Basham, possibly a guy who can be a force this year. So there's a lot between the two classes that the Colts are going to build off. And supplementing that with some off-season acquisitions throughout the season, we'll see that talent level slowly start to rise on the back end of the roster and just keep moving up. And eventually you've got a perennial contender in there. And especially if you've got Andrew Luck, not only a healthy, which I'm all right, look, new rule, no more qualifying if Andrew Luck's healthy. I'm all done with that. When Andrew Luck comes on the field, this offense is significantly better, right? He is a guy who can take a crappy roster to an 11-5 season. Now he's going to have some more talent around him to where he's not completely and totally reliant on everything else that he gets going on in his head. These guys around him are going to be able to actually play ball and do something for him. That's something that a lot of us should be happy about, man. We need to see some guys who can catch those short passes and turn it upfield and really make something out of nothing. We need to see an offensive and defensive line that can hold their own. We need to see some guys be able to puncture from the interior defensive line. That's what we're getting. That's what we're getting. Tyquan Lewis wasn't a big name because he was an edge. We've talked about this already a couple times, but he is a big name. If you see his explosion when they kick him down inside as a tackle, guys, he's hard for those interior offensive linemen to handle. He's really hard for him. He's slippery. He gets sideways a lot, moves in really quickly. And even if he's not a guy who's actually getting a hand on the quarterback, he's a guy who's definitely making the quarterback get off his platform, reshuffle his feet, reset him and try to look somewhere downfield. But he's also a guy who can push that quarterback out of the pocket left and right. That's going to set up nicely for some of the guys that they've drafted over the past couple years who could use that quarterback to get off his platform quickly so that they can bring up some sack totals. If nothing else, they can be heavily disruptive and help those corners. Quicker the pressure, the better the corner play, even if the corner play is not great. So the corners, in my opinion, right now that we've got on the roster are solid. Decent. The coverage on the back end, though, is really good, in my opinion. Malik Hooker, you've got the long and lanky Quincy Wilson. So this is turning out to what we want, guys. It's not all about being overnight. We know that. I've got to remind myself of that all the time because I have to be excited. I want to be pumped up for everything that's going on with this Colts team, and I want somebody to be an impact player. Right now, we've just got to be patient and see everything happen as it does in front of us. So, guys, that's all I've got for you tonight. Thank you guys all for watching, listening. Make sure you guys are getting to the iTunes and giving us a rating and review. Definitely appreciate those every single time. You guys have been great. Thank you if you suffered through the live show at Metazoa last night. Really appreciate you guys. Thank you for the kind words and everything behind that. Sorry about the audio issues. Some of this is still kind of new, when you get into something that plugs in that you're not plugged in before too. And, you've got to make sure that everything's working with that. So bear with us occasionally on that, but we're going to be doing more live shows. We're going to be doing a lot more things to get you guys excited and, get you to Stampede Blue. So get there and check out everything that we're doing on the site. Thank you guys all for listening and watching, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the Colts Cast. Stampede Blue.